You're listening to the Teach Better Talk podcast, featuring expert educators eager to share progressive tactics to reach more students. Teach Better Talk is created by teachers and fueled by passion. Let's get started.
Hey everyone, welcome to episode 119 of Teach Better Talk. I'm Ray Hewart, and as always, I'm with my relaxed and rejuvenated friend, Jeff Gargas.
Relaxed and rejuvenated.
Here's the deal, Jeff. We are recording this a little in advance, but when this actually publishes, it will be 24 hours after the Teach Better conference. And I just want our listeners to believe that you're relaxed because to be honest, you're probably dead.
Probably. Right now I'm anxious and stressed, but super, super, super excited. Actually lay down all the final details at the venue this afternoon. So super excited about all that. But yeah, at this point, hopefully when this episode comes out and you're listening to this, hopefully Ray and I are both relaxed and rejuvenated and feeling okay after an exciting Teach Better conference. So, you know, I think that's, I joke about that, Ray, but it's something that I've been trying to work on and be better at because I'm not great at that. But that's just that self-care and taking care of yourself. And it's kind of interesting, you know, our guest today on this episode, Brian, talks about that. One of the things that he's doing, that sort of morning routine that he has and a goal that he has for just being a little more aware of his self-care and what he's doing. So
wasn't he such an awesome guest?
Yeah, he was fantastic. And he talks about, he gives some good tips on that. And I think what he does is really cool. So I don't want to give it away, but I think it's such an important focus, and we talk about it, we mention it, but I don't think you can talk about it enough, honestly, about the fact that we need to take care of ourselves, because if we don't, there's nothing left for anybody else.
So here's my issue. And I was just talking about this topic, well, a similar topic with Caitlin Giordano, who's on the Teach Better team. And sometimes in education, and I think our team tries not to, but sometimes in the world of education, we make these large statements, but then we don't actually provide the tactical details to ensure that those large statements become the reality, right? So when I was talking to Caitlin Giordano about this, it was about building relationships with students. And of course, you should build relationships, but what are like the three things I can go do today in my classroom? Or what's the lens that I can look through today in my classroom to ensure that I actually accomplish that task? And unfortunately, I feel like self-care is the exact same concept where, yes, educators should be taking care of themselves, but what is the three steps that I can take before I go to bed tonight to ensure that I actually make that a reality? And I love that Brian kind of gives us a lot of that, especially on his social media posts. Mm-hmm. But I want to challenge our listeners, let's give them three right now. Okay. And challenge them to do three before the end of the day.
Gotcha. So three things. So I think the biggest, the one that is huge but can be really small is just to move.
Oh.
To just do something. Take like, but intentionally. So now, obviously we all move every day. You're moving around your classroom, you're moving to and from school, stuff like that. But take a moment at the beginning of your day in the morning to move in some way that's not just required by your day, right? So that maybe that's going for a walk. Maybe that's a run or a jog. Maybe that's going to the gym. Maybe that's just doing some sit-ups, push-ups, doing some jumping jacks. I don't care. Whatever it is, just do something. Move intentionally. Move your body. It could be just be stretching, some yoga.
Yeah, I was going to say, can I recommend stretching?
Yeah, like, stretch. I'm telling you what, stretching is – so one of the things that I do in the morning, like, you know, I do a full glass of water, which is something that I recommend, but then I do a breathing routine to get myself changed. And then the stretching is amazing. Like, you know, when you get to be 37 or whatever I am, like, you hurt just from sleeping. So just stretching intentionally can set you up for a great day, like feeling better. So I think just intentionally moving is a really important piece, is a great challenge. And it's something you can easily implement, I think.
All right.
So that's one. Okay.
So I have one, but I'm totally stealing it from Dan Tricario. Do you remember him? The Zen teacher?
Yeah.
Okay. So I'm stealing his, but I'm giving him credit because he's a genius and I love him. But he, depending on when you're listening to this podcast, we may have to vary it for you, but he takes his first sip of coffee and it's an intentional moment for himself. So the reality is, as an educator, your coffee is going to be cold by the time you finish it because you have like a number of different things to do. But that first sip of coffee, that's yours. That's for you. And he makes it a very intentional moment of, okay, I'm setting myself up for the day. So if you're listening to this right now, even if your coffee's not warm, take a sip and have it be for you. Or if you are not a coffee drinker or don't have access right now, then tonight for dinner or right before bed, give yourself a really awesome like sip of water or whatever beverage you prefer and make it for yourself to give yourself that moment of kind of just like resetting your body and your mindset for the day.
I think it's a really cool one because you can actually take that to just about anything. It's just finding something in your day to make a very intentional moment for yourself.
Yes.
Because teachers, it's so just teachers naturally take care of others. They look after others. They educate others. So just the intentionally putting yourself forward. So I think that's a great one. I think another big one for is just making a healthy decision. And I say a healthy decision because I think when we talk about eating healthy and stuff like that, we get so – I think we can get very intimidated or susceptible to failing too much because we try to make a major shift in our diet. We go on a diet. Diets don't work, right? We try to do this massive change, and that's very tough to do, and it can lead to setbacks that make you just think you can't handle it. So just making one intentionally healthy decision every day is, I think, an easier way to get there, a better way, a more effective way to get there. You just do it once, and you may not make that same decision tomorrow, and that's okay, but making it an intentionally healthy decision today or tomorrow, whatever, depending on when you're listening to this, to eat a fruit instead of a cookie or whatever it might be, right? So being intentional about that, I think just small little steps, I think, is really important. And I know you said three, but I think a fourth thing that you just need to do, this isn't necessarily a challenge, but something that you need to do, and Ray and I are going to do it right now for you, is just give yourself permission to do that. To be okay, to take a moment for yourself. And like Ray said, and be intentional. Take that sip that's just for you. Like, that's okay. Like, it's okay to take a little bit of time for yourself. And I think it's really, really important.
Okay, I feel even more relaxed now than I did before.
Oh, good. That's good. I'm glad that you're relaxed. You're feeling relaxed and breathe out.
I know. I feel like you have like a yoga voice, but to be honest, the best podcasting yoga voice is Sarah Johnson, who gets brought up a lot in this episode. But she's somebody that if you need like a beautiful voice to just soothe you, you go turn on Sarah Johnson's podcast.
Yes, she is fantastic. I'm telling you what, though, honestly, though, Brian Carpenter, who's our guest on this episode, he's got a great voice for podcasts. And I thought
he does. Like I think he is going to be my new co-host.
He should be. I will sign off on that. That's great. But let's talk about him for a second. This is really, really a great episode. So Brian is a teacher, 11-year teacher. He actually talked about how this is actually his second career. And I'm not going to even talk about his first career because he goes into it and shares a really cool story about it and where he's at. But Brian teaches in a cool, unique school in British Columbia, Canada, where he's in it's a blended learning environment where he's got a lot of students in their school that are virtual from around British Columbia, some even local that do that. So he's got a unique take on that. He does dive a little bit into some of the challenges that they face with that, but also some of the challenges they don't face because of that, which I thought was really cool. Brian's very cool. He touches a lot on the self-care. He does a really cool morning routine that he has and a hashtag that you can follow that kind of help you get there. I like the goal that he laid out for himself. He touches a lot on and really dives into utilizing social media in an effective way to build a strong PLN and learn and grow from that. And I really liked how he dove into that. So anything else you want people to take away from this episode specifically, Ray?
No, I was a Brian fan before, but I'm more of a Brian fan now. So enjoy the episode, soak it in, and go connect with him because this guy's doing awesome things.
Yeah, you just nailed it, Ray. That was exactly the right. I'm so glad you said that because he talks about being a fan of like our podcast and stuff, but we are so Brian fans.
Absolutely.
Like, absolutely. So let's get into episode 119 with Brian Carpenter.
Hey everyone, it's Ray. We are about to get right back to the episode, but I wanted to make sure you are a part of our Facebook group. The Teach Better team has a private Facebook group that has grown so much over the past few months, and we continue to do live sessions, answer questions, and have teachers share their lesson plan ideas so we can all collaborate together. Head over to Facebook and search Teach Better Team to request to join, or you can head to teachbettergroup.com and request there. Either way, we'll see you over on Facebook. Now let's get back to the episode.
All right, we are here and we are talking with Brian Carpenter, and we're already having a good time here. We're already laughing. I actually had to stop you. I'm like, wait, stop, because this is good. I have to record all this. We're supposed to record a podcast right now. Brian, that's how excited we are to have you on the show right now, and we're already having fun, so I'm super excited for this. But before we get going too far, man, just want to know how you're feeling right now.
I'm feeling really good, Jeff and Ray, you know, and I'm excited to be here. And yeah, a little nervous, but you know, that's just talking on the air and having people that I don't know listen to me, but that's the way it is.
Oh, we're going to make this super easy for you. There's no reason to be stressed. You're natural already.
All right. Well, that's exciting. Thanks.
Ray, I don't like when you speak for me because I'm going to make it very difficult.
You're a mess, Jeff. I don't know. All right, Brian, this is easy because the first question's all about you. But to be honest, it's a pretty loaded question because we're going to ask you to kind of describe all that you do, which for an educator is always a challenge because we wear so many hats. So would you mind just telling us a little about yourself and how you answer the question of what you do?
All right. Well, what do I do? Just some background. I've been a teacher for 11 years, and this is my second career. And prior to that, I was a research scientist. I'll get back to that in a little bit. But I teach at a school here in Abbotsford, BC, which is about 45 minutes to an hour east of Vancouver, British Columbia, which is on the Pacific Ocean, down in the bottom left corner of Canada. We have left. Yeah, that's left if you're looking at the map. That's right. the school that I work at is the Abbotsford Virtual School. We're an online distributed learning school. So we've got students that are from all over British Columbia taking courses at our school, a number from our own town. And I teach in an online space with them as well as face-to-face with a small group of grade 9 and 10 students, grade 6 to 8, and you know, even some grade 11s and 12s that come into our building for various courses. And we've got our Fusion program, which is a two-day-a-week program. So they spend 40% of their time in our school building. Our school building's 90 years old, and it was built a long time ago, and it's had continuous education in it ever since the very early days of our building. The way we do education is very different than what they did then. They didn't have the internet back then, and we have it and we use it to our advantage to meet students where they're at and all that kind of stuff. So my teaching assignments, I teach Chem 11 and 12, Math 10 and 11, Applied Design Skills and Technology, grades 6 to 10, and Media Design 11 and 12. Last year, I had the privilege of working with our kindergarten to grade 2 students, teaching them science and working with the teacher that was in their classroom, as well as our grade of 3 to 5. So I taught all levels last year, which was super exciting. It was pretty cool.
Very cool. So do you have a blend? If I'm hearing you right, you have a blend of some students that are there with you and some that are virtual.
That's correct. Exactly.
Okay.
Yes.
So I got to ask, like, sort of what the challenges are. Are there specific challenges that come along with that, or does it seem like it's pretty natural to you because it's how you guys do it? Like, what are some of the hurdles that you're facing in there? That's an interesting blend.
That's right. Well, I got started in a regular classroom. I taught for the first year and a half of my career in a regular bricks and mortar school, two high schools in town here. And then I was on the, you know, layoff recall list and was forced to consider a job. You know, as they presented them to me, and this job came up, and I was like, okay, what else you got? Because, you know, I'm like, AVS, Abbotsford Virtual School, that's a busy, crazy place with all the online that you have to do and working with students, not in a traditional regular manner. And I was like, okay, what else you got? And they said, well, we got a 0.4 over at this other place. And I go, okay, I guess I'm taking the 1.0. And I came here, and it was deer in the headlights because I inherited 50 students from a previous teacher because these students hadn't completed all their coursework. And so Our school is asynchronous, meaning students can come and go at various times through the year. They're not in a cohort model. So students are individual learners in the online space, which presents a lot of challenges because as a teacher, I need to be capable and competent with all of the curriculum that's our in our online courses all of the time, because someone could ask me about, you know, unit 5 from Chem 12, and another student could ask me about unit 3 from Math 10. Mm-hmm. And there's a lot of content that you have to be aware of. So, you know, that was one of the very first challenges that I ran into, was having to be aware and able with all the curriculum all the time. Another is just communication, right? So the way we communicate, we have our message system within our Moodle course framework. That's our learning management system that we use. And, you know, just having a routine of being able to deal with messages and communicate with students effectively in a text messaging manner is important. We don't do a lot of video conferencing. I don't do a lot of video conferencing with students, because of privacy stuff and things like that. Mm-hmm. You know, and it's harder to have a record of that unless you're recording it all. And, you know, you never know what you're going to see when the screen comes on. Right. So, just for teacher safety, you know, that's one of those reasons why I don't do that. But, you know, yeah, so there's lots of challenges, but there's also lots of opportunities, you know. Yeah. In our some of the things that we're not challenged with is classroom management. I don't have to do classroom management hardly even with my blended learning students that come into our building, right? Because mm-hmm. they're here for a very different reason than 5 days a week. They're here for a short period of time. Yeah, there's classroom management things that every teacher has to do, but I don't have the same behavioral and challenges that, you know, other places have. So
very cool. So, all right. So I really appreciate you diving into that, because I think it's a unique situation that I think is interesting. So I appreciate you kind of give us the details on that. So let's talk about failure for a minute. So I know you listen to the show, so you know where we go with this. You know why I love talking this, but can you share a time that you've had a failure in your life? Sort of what happened, how it made you feel, how did you overcome it, and what did you take away from that?
All right. Well, in a previous life, before I became a teacher back in 2008, I finished my Master's of Science in Synthetic Organometallic Chemistry at the University of Calgary back in 1999. My wife and I married, and I got a job in Langley, British Columbia, which is about halfway between Vancouver and where I am now, at a small research pharmaceutical company called Anirmed. While I was there, I was doing organic chemistry, and we're in the lab, you know, wearing lab coats and safety glasses all the time, and making compounds for research science purposes of trying to solve some, you know, medical issues like HIV therapy, as well as some cancer therapies. And in the process of doing that, I did medicinal chemistry. So where we were making like a little tiny bit, like just 30 milligrams of something, just enough to look at the end of a, you know, the tip of a fork, right? So that we could confirm that we'd made this compound. Once biology got a hold of it, they would say, hey, let's move forward with that. And then we would make more of it as time went on. So that's a bit of background about where I was when this failure happened. And being a scientist, failure is one of those natural things that you have to deal with, because that's how we learn to make progress, is by watching and figuring out the failures. The negative results are, you know, people look at them as failures, but that's a very important part of science. So I was moved into the research group called the Process Development Group, where we would scale up these processes that the medicinal chemist came up with to make lots more of these compounds. Our task for this one compound that we had to make 100 grams of this, and the largest scale that our company had made in the medicinal chemistry group prior to, you know, before us, was up to a gram scale. We took a look at all their work that they'd done. We didn't even dive into doing, you know, a 5 gram scale. We just were like, let's go 100 grams and let's go all in and figure this out and do this. So we set it up, got it started. Oh, we purchased about $6,000 worth of chemicals and a catalyst, a platinum oxide catalyst. And we had to do this reaction that would stop halfway. We wanted to stop this reaction halfway from hydrogenating two rings. We only wanted to put hydrogen on one ring. And so the long and short of that story is that we got to the end of it and it didn't work. Hmm. And like it failed. It was bad. Like we're like looking at each other in the lab going, okay, this is bad. What do we do? Well, we picked up the phone and we called our vice president of chemistry. And he came down and leaned against the lab bench, you know, with the safety glasses on and looked at us and said, you know, can you guys fix it? And we're like, well, I think we can. And we had to pick apart this process that we had done. You know, we spent $6,000 worth on this of this, you know, chemicals on that we'd just kind of gone down the drain. And we had to pick it apart and figure out how to do it. And at the end of the day, we overcame as a group. It took us about a month to do that. But we had managed to take that 5% catalyst loading that we needed in the first place, that we thought we needed in the first place, and reduce it down to 0.1%, which is 1/50th the amount. So that's, you know, going from $3,000 to 150 of that, which is like, I don't know, $60 worth of catalyst, is huge. And our yield went up and the reaction didn't take 24 hours. It only took 1 hour to do, which at the when we sent it off to production, you know, in England at a different location with our work that we had done, we saved the company about $1.5 million.
Wow.
Whoa.
So, you know, so that speed bump that was actually disastrous, man, that was a bad day. Like that day in the lab was like, okay, I just want to crawl under the lab bench and, you know, not talk to anybody, you know, turned out after because, you know, as scientists, you just, you don't, you have to be unrelenting, you know, just have to be, you know, be relentless and just continue working and working and working until you figure it out. And sometimes it won't, you won't figure it out, but if you don't put the effort into knowing that you can't do it, you'll never know that you can't do it. Right.
Mm-hmm.
So we started to say, I started to say at that point that every obstacle is an opportunity waiting to happen. You know, you have a hurdle you got to get over, and that's an opportunity to figure out how to get over that hurdle so that you can, you know, be successful on the other side.
Oh, I love that. I love that you took it from the scientific standpoint. Really cool. And I learned a whole lot right there. So that was really cool too. So let's flip it now. Brian, let's talk about a successful moment you had. I mean, that was kind of a successful moment in the end. So I like that. Let's talk about another one you've had. This could be something big or something small, but tell us what happened. Why was it a success for you? And what did you take away from that?
All right. So this success, we're going to fast forward probably, about 12 or 14 years. This was about 3 years ago when I was teaching digital literacy with my students, and I'd worked with them to teach them Google Docs and slides and, you know, all manner of taking photos and all this, these, you know, different things that we do every day in our classrooms now. But this was the first year we'd been running our Fusion program here at our school. And, it was based on kind of the design process. I'm still not good at it. I'm still learning and trying to figure out how to do that better. But we had gotten through learning about Google Docs. We'd done digital citizenship. We'd done a number of different, you know, technical things and playing and learning all these different tools that we came around to Mother's Day. And I thought, you know what? Mother's Day is important, right? It's one of those days that you don't let go. And I thought, my students are in grade 9 and 10, and, you know, we can make Mother's Day cards for our moms, right? You know, so we didn't go into Google Docs and make a Google Docs, you know, or a Google Slides Mother's Day card. Well, we did, but what was connected to that was a video that we had made, right? And I taught them how to use WeVideo, just ever so briefly. And we got some green screen material, actually taped green paper to the wall, and had the students get in front of the camera, and we made a 1 minute video where they talked to their moms. Then we took that green screen video that they had taken and put backgrounds into it, put some music onto it, you know, and then they sent it to me. And as the teacher, I posted it onto my YouTube channel so that it was, you know, curated and as an unlisted link. I gave them the link back and they made a QR code and a short link out of that and put it onto a card that they printed out and gave to their moms for Mother's Day. So that's not the success part. We made this. It was awesome. I was excited about it. But what I didn't expect, the unexpected result of this, was one of the moms on Facebook wrote and said, oh my goodness, my son made a Mother's Day video card and I'm sitting here in tears. And it was just like, wow, you know, like the authentic audience that I had ex- needed it for, you know, like, I'm like, this is for your moms. I didn't expect that the reaction from the moms was going to be as it was. And, you know, that just speaks to how authentic audience can make us do things that's so much better. Part of the reason I'm here on the podcast tonight with you guys is that I think having people out there listening to what you have to say makes you a better person and a better teacher, because you're thinking about what you're actually going to do. And so that was my success. I've got lots of little successes like that. That's one of them that really stands out, because it was just, I heard a mom say, wow, that was just so amazing.
Brian, that was such a great story, especially with your tie-in. I mean, both of your stories so far have been really great situations that then you've tied directly back to a moment for an educator to be reflective. I mean, your mentality of thinking like an authentic audience makes learning real. I mean, gosh, Jeff, I mean, that's literally what I love about education, is finding those relevant and authentic situations for our students to actually have the value that they need in their classrooms for their learning opportunities. So I'm so just enthralled with your stories. I think I could listen to you share 15 more failures and successes and still be completely engaged.
Well, you know, the whole failure part is part of the design process, right? Like, we teach our students that we need to, you know, come up, define the problem. Then we need to, you know, do the background research and interview people and figure out what they need. And then we got to make a prototype. Then we got to go back to them and say, do you like it? And they go, no. And you go, oh my goodness, that was a failure, right? Like that, yes. it doesn't feel good when that happens, right? But then we got to go back in that feedback loop of, no, I didn't care for what you did. I'd like you to consider doing something different. Makes you go back and repeat, right? And The thing about the design cycle that is for me, that's new, I'm a scientist. Like, the whole scientific method is exactly the design cycle, except for the very beginning, which is the empathize with the user part, right? As a chemist, we would, you know, we were in the lab so far removed from the patients that we would never have an opportunity to empathize with the needs of the patient, right? So we weren't there for designing why we're making these compounds. We would just make them, and if they worked, great, we would hand them off and scale them up. And if they didn't work, we'd go back and figure out if we could make them. And so, you know, science is very reflective. Like, if you don't write it down, you can't go back and go, what didn't work, right? And so reflection's been a really big part for me of this whole educational thing that we do, because without reflecting on what has worked and hasn't worked, we can't, you know, figure out how to teach better and, you know, how to be better people. And so that is what actually drives me. And
I love it. Well, you kind of started answering this, but I want to make sure that you really think through this, because this is one of my favorite questions. And I think that you're just so spot on with identifying what keeps you excited in education. Because, you know, for an educator that's in teaching, but doesn't feel that fire, doesn't feel that excitement, can no longer be an effective educator. So as you're talking about what really fuels your fire and keeping you engaged in this profession, what do you think it is that's keeping you going?
I think that what's keeping me going in education and being excited is making connections outside of my classroom space and connecting with educators like yourself. I would say global connections and the internet allows us to connect with others beyond our space, going to conferences and networking and talking to other educators that are doing what we are doing and figuring out how we can do what we're doing better is really important for growing our practice in our classroom, right? The whole point of all that is that you got to be reflective and go, okay, is what I'm doing great? And if it is, let's talk about what's going on there. And if it's not, go, okay, what are you doing that I can maybe do in my space? And not necessarily cookie cutter copy it, because that doesn't necessarily work, but to make it your own and figure out how we can work together with educators, other educators that are out there, you know, to grow our practice. It wasn't until about a year and a half ago that I really got the point of Twitter. I heard about the point of Twitter, and this goes back to when I first started with my Twitter account back in 2010. I was sitting at a keynote, and George Koros was, and his brother Alec were the keynote address for this conference I was at. And George started talking about Twitter and the power of Twitter and how he uses Twitter to ask questions. He's got a problem in his classroom or in his school. And he's like, well, people out there, what do you think, right? And so during that keynote, I started my Twitter account and I'm like, oh, this is really great. And you can start passing notes kind of in class, you know, like behind the teacher's back, and you're having this conversation on the hashtag for the conference. And I thought, well, that's pretty cool. But then the conference was over and I stopped. Well, the next year, the conference, you know, I got to another conference. I'm like, hey, there's a hashtag. And so I jumped in and I got going at the conference and, you know, chatted a little bit, but then it stopped. And it was on and off, and it wasn't really a lot until I ran into George again one day, and it was at a different conference, and he was keynoting, and he said, okay, as I'm going to keynote, I want you guys to jump in on the hashtag for the conference here and talk about things that I'm talking about and share your ideas. He goes, and I'm going to pay attention to that while I'm keynoting. And I'm like, no, he's not. He's not actually going to do that, right? Because he can't do that. You can't present and then watch Twitter at the same time. Well, he starts playing a video, and then he goes, retweet something that I tweeted, right? And I'm like, what? And it showed up on my screen, and I was like blown away because he's connecting with me and he's standing on the stage at the front of the room, right? A bit later, he, you know, I'm like, George just did what he said he was going to do. And he's looking at what I'm saying and he's connecting with me. And about 10 minutes later, he looks across the room and he goes, and that's right, Brian, I did what I said I was going to do. And I'm connecting and making a connection. And the whole thing with this, with our social media, is that we can connect with each other in ways that, you know, isn't even possible, you know, otherwise, right? You and I and Jeff and Ray, we've never had coffee together. We've never met each other face to face, but yet tonight we're having a conversation. I'm on the West Coast of the continent and you guys are out on the East Coast and we're talking, which isn't possible without, you know, the internet, right?
Brian, I feel like I just was re-inspired to get on Twitter, and I'm like, wait, I'm on Twitter, right? Like, hold on.
Yes, you are. You are, right.
I'm just confirming because, gosh, I'm like, oh my goodness, I've totally been in that situation with a different person standing on stage. And you're right that there's a practicality to needing someone to show you how to utilize a tool effectively. And I love that, yes, that you've had that experience. That's so cool.
Yeah. You know, when I try to raise the connection outside our building with educators in my building, you know, and just getting them to be connected educators, you know, and you read a book and you can connect with the author, which is an amazing thing, right? So
absolutely. So I have another question really focused on advice. And I guess you've shared so much that I think you have a ton to pick from in terms of the advice that you would give educators that were listening. But what is something that they can do, not just a concept, but what is a tactical strategy that our listeners can take 5 minutes and either finish this podcast and go do, or maybe they can pause right here, but definitely come back, pause right here and go do something to be a better educator. What's the advice you'd give them?
The advice that I would give them, I would say, you know, get connected more than you are. Get a book that you're interested in reading and follow the author on Twitter. Like, make that connection between the paper book that you're reading and the person. Like, we have an opportunity today to make connections with authors that we've never been able to do before. So get on Twitter, start following hashtags for things that you're interested in, and organizations like, you know, Teach Better, and, you know, and others, so that you can grow in your professional learning network. That's what I would say.
Oh, that's awesome. Oh, I agree.
Good advice. Powerful advice. I love it. So, all right, Brian, let's have some fun. We're going to do the next 6 questions. And I know you know what's coming. This is nothing for you right here. So next 6 questions, your goal is to do each one in 15 seconds or less. You ready to go?
I'm ready.
All right, man, give us one EdTech tool you could not live without.
Adobe Spark and Google Classroom. That's 2.
That's two. Like, it's, you already
he's
lost.
He's cheating.
No, you know what? He's not cheating. He's going above and beyond. All right, give us.
I'm being overachiever. Yeah,
give us a book you're reading right now.
Teach Better.
Yay!
Well, all right, there you go.
Hey, you're connecting with the authors.
I sure am connecting with the authors.
I love it. I know. I saw you. You posted it on Twitter as well, sharing that you were reading it. We appreciate that. It's awesome, man. Who do we need to follow on Twitter or Instagram today?
On Twitter, you need to follow two people. You need to follow Tim Cavey at Teachers on Fire. He's got another podcast that's fantastic. And you need to follow and connect with Sarah Johnson at Sarah S. A. Johnson. She's the author of Bounce Like a Pirate.
I'm going to ruin your time, but yes, absolutely. Tim Cavey is one of our favorite people in the world. And Sarah is like such a great person to be connected with. She will lift you up.
Wait, can
day.
I just so, say though?
Absolutely. Yeah.
Definitely. Can I say really quick?
Yeah.
Brian, you're a natural on a podcast, so you're going to be on more podcasts. Sarah Johnson, like, can suck every, like, every secret you've had, you expose on her podcast. So be very careful on Sarah Johnson's podcast because she just has like witchcraft going on in her world.
That's right.
Give us a good YouTube channel or website for educators.
I just found recently Global Community Foundation Learning, edu.gcfglobal.org, which has resources for educators, students, and people in general to learn stuff about graphic design, writing resumes, and all kinds of other stuff.
Give us a daily, weekly, or monthly routine every teacher should get into.
My daily routine that I do every day is called #FreshAir@5. And for more details, mm-hmm. you can go to my blog at briancarpenter.com and read about it.
And what's the best piece of advice you've ever received?
It was 1994. I was working at a environmental chemistry lab in Edmonton. And the boss said to me, well, the owner of the company said, do an honest day's work and you'll have no regrets.
Mm. True.
I like it. That is solid. So I got to ask, because you mentioned it, but what do you think of the book, Brian?
The book. I like the book. I'm only into chapter two.
Okay.
And I'm only halfway into Plan Better. And I like how you're talking about plan to not plan. You got to have a plan, but you have to be willing to change directions. And as mm-hmm. a scientist, we have our plans of mm-hmm. what we want to make and what we want to do. But as the reactions go on and we get the results, we have to pivot and change direction so that we can, you know, make our way through the quagmire of chemistry. And we got to do the same in education.
Love it.
You know, I have the most important question of the night, which you already know. But I want to make sure our listeners can connect with you. You've shared so much now. I can only imagine that you're going to continue to share so much expertise in the future. Would you mind kind of sharing your Twitter or maybe a website that our listeners can connect with you on?
All right. My Twitter handle is at Brian Carr, BRYONCAR. And my website is briancarpenter.com, BRYONCARPENTER.com. So that's it. I don't have a Facebook page for education. I got a personal Facebook page, but that's for my family. And, you know, I don't have a YouTube channel other than just posting videos that I make for class and things like that. So, yes.
And, you know, you can find all the links and all the resources and everything we talked about in this episode over at teachbetter.com, as well as those links to connect with Brian, get connect with him on Twitter, and check out his blog. And then definitely follow that #FreshAir@5. It's always an awesome to see what you've got going on in the morning. So definitely follow that. We'll have all that over in the show notes over at teachbetter.com. Be sure to hit subscribe so you don't miss any upcoming episodes. And if you can give us a rating and review, we really, really appreciate that. And let's keep taking this one step further. Think of just three of your colleagues who need to hear amazing stories like Brian's and share this podcast with them. Brian, man, this has been a blast. So glad we were able to get you on the podcast and just kind of dig in. I appreciate your stories and everything you shared. And just for having some fun with us and hanging out with us, man. Thank you.
It's been really good. Thanks for having me. I really appreciate it. And, you know, I've been a faithful fan for less than 2 months listening to your guys' podcast since episode 100. But people should listen because you guys got great stuff going on. So thanks, Jeff and Ray. Appreciate it very much.
Appreciate those kind words. And until next time, let's get out there and let's teach better.